from the heart of Dubai, where tomorrow is being built today to the world. Welcome to the CTO Show with Mehmet. Here, we redefine technology and reimagine possibilities. With Mehmet, delve into the riveting realms of AI, cybersecurity, and digital technology. Experience the thrilling highs and lows of startups. Immerse yourself in the spirit of entrepreneurship and witness the future of business innovation being written in real time. Now, without further ado, let's tune in and explore the future.
Hello and welcome back to a new episode of the CTO Show with Mehmet. Today, I'm very pleased to have with me Matt Watson. Matt, my way of doing the intros is I keep it to the guest because you can introduce yourself better than anyone else. So welcome to the CTO Show. Can you let us introduce about yourself and what you do?
Yeah, so Matt Watson, been a software developer for over 20 years, been an entrepreneur for over 20 years. Started my first company in 2003. And I mean, since then, I guess I've never really truly had a boss. So I've always been either a CTO or actually most of the last 10 years been a CEO and CTO both. Basically been a startup founder who also acted as a CTO. And that's actually my role today. So yeah, but been dabbling in entrepreneurship and software development, building SaaS products for a long time.
That's cool. You know, maybe it's a little bit very traditional question, but what gets you in the tech world and entrepreneurship world?
You know, I started doing computer programming actually when I was around 13 to play a game. So back then they were dial-up modem games that were all text. But I started doing some scripting and basic programming then to basically play the games for me while I was asleep and at school. So that's how I first did programming and decided to go to college for it. And, you know, it was always just very open-minded to do extra things, looking for, you know, side projects, side hustles. And my first company I ever started was the same thing. I had a car dealer came in to buy a computer from me when I was working at Sears. I worked at Sears, which is a department store in the US, or used to be anyways. And I was in college. And so I ended up helping this car dealer like rewrite some software. And long story short, a couple of years later, somebody else introduced me, or that dealership introduced me to somebody else. And that's how I ended up starting my first company. So it was just, you know, somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody who needs some help. And I was just, you know, I sat down with a guy and he told me what he wanted to do. I'm like, sure, yeah, I can help you. I was just very opportunistic, always been opportunistic, right? And I think that was the key. And as a software developer, I've now been the technical co-founder 3 times and started my own company as like the true founder 1 time. So, and I've had better success as the technical co-founder, actually.
Oh, that's good to know. Now, but like you have this, I would say, mix between technology and business. And, you know, like you describe yourself, because I was checking, you know, the LinkedIn profile, you know, like a rare mix between product developer type and, you know, someone who can do business. So how do you strike this balance between technology, product and business goals? And, you know, I'm sure like you face a lot of challenges down the road. So how you overcome these challenges?
Well, 20 years into my career, right, I've changed a lot from the very beginning. You know, my first job I ever had was for a company here in Kansas City called Ticket Solutions. And they're a reseller of like concert and sports tickets. And they hired me and there was only like one other developer. And then they fired that guy after like 6 weeks and told me I was the lead developer because I was doing a better job than this person. And they had like a bunch of years of experience. I didn't know what in the world I was doing. I was like a junior developer. But I credit that job for a lot of my success because it thrust me into everything. Like I was talking to customers every day. I was the one that was figuring out like what the product should do, how the product should work. I was traveling all over the United States, installing software, talking to people. And, you know, I think a lot of software developers work in corporate offices and they hide in a cubicle somewhere and they don't talk to anyone. And, you know, I think that experience for me was huge, getting out in front of the customers. I mean, very product focused, very customer focused, I think had a huge impact on me. And, you know, over many years, picking up all the other entrepreneurship bits of like dealing with business partners and legal and raising capital and selling a company and all the different things that you go through, right? Which is just a long journey of that.
Yeah. Great to hear this. And I think this will resonate. Actually, you know, like I have kind of a similar experience, like both from tech and business, and people ask me like, how do you manage this? So yeah, like actually experience is everything that will teach you over the time. So it's not like something, you know, it came by nature, I would say. So it's like something I needed to develop over the years. Now, as a CTO, Matt, I think this is, you know, we didn't discuss it much on the show, but you know, when you are a CTO, you are responsible of hiring a team and scaling this team. So, and you know, for anyone who's maybe first time founder as a CTO, right, or co-founder, let's say, who is looking for some, you know, high level ideas or advices. So what you can share from your experience about, you know, hiring tech talent and then scaling them?
Well, hiring is always hard, and interviewing software developers is really difficult, right? You can give them all the tests in the world. You can give them, you know, 5 phone interviews. And at the end of the day, you really still don't know if they're going to be a good developer or not. Like it's just really hard. You know, I'm a huge fan in hybrid teams of, I think you need both local talent and remote talent and global talent, all of it, right? I never did offshore in my entire career until about 5 years ago. And my startup needed to hire like 10 developers, and I couldn't, there's no way I was going to be able to afford local developers here in Kansas City, which were like $150,000 a year for every one of them. So that's when I made my first foray into using offshore about 5 years ago. Ended up hiring about 20 something people for my startup to help do offshore. And we still had local people in the office. And I think learning how to leverage offshore is a really critical skill, because it's the only way you can really scale up and grow your teams. I mean, you can hire people, you know, offshore for 60%, 70% or more or less than local, usually, depending on where you live and all the different things. But learning how to work with offshore, I think, is really important. And just finding the talent wherever you can find it, right? Like remote, anywhere. It could be anywhere in the world, could be anywhere in your country. There's talent out there. And I think the other key to that is very quickly figuring out if people are good or bad. And if they're not good, you got to get rid of them as fast as possible. And sometimes it's just the matchup of the type of work you need to do and their skill set. Like they might be great at some basic web app development, you know, building forms or whatever, doing front end work. And then you ask them to build some complex back end, you know, queue processing, high volume, high performing system. They don't know anything about that. Like I've never done that before, right? And so it's also matching up the right skill set, you know, be it mobile, front end work, back end work, like all these things. So it's just hard. But if you hire the wrong person, you've got to move on as fast as possible, because otherwise they can just sit and spin their wheels forever. And the hardest part about software developers is they can actually be a negative impact on the team. Like they're just sucking up everybody else's time, and you're like literally better off without them. They're just dragging you down. And those are the things you have to be able to identify very quickly, where this person is just wasting everyone else's time and they got to go.
Yeah. Now, a question that came to my mind now, Matt, and coming back to the idea now in your current new venture, like, I mean, you are the CEO and CTO at the same time. So that is covered. But in a normal scenario, we'd see like 2 co-founders, one who is the CEO, the other is the CTO. Now, how important for, you know, these 2 to divide the roles between them? And who do you think, you know, have, I would say, the say when it comes to validating the idea? Like, because I hear this sometimes, because, you know, technical people, you know, they care much about technology. They don't want to think too much about the business side of it. But from your experience, and because, you know, sometimes like you're lucky, like you're doing both at the same time, but sometimes we see like two founders, you know, taking different roles. But when it comes to the validation, things get lost. So from your experience, what you can put on this topic?
So it's a hard topic. And I would say for anybody who wants to be an entrepreneur, the first time you go to be an entrepreneur and start a company, I wouldn't really suggest doing it alone. I would suggest having a business partner. And you know, if you have success with that and later on you feel like you can go be an entrepreneur by yourself and be a solo founder, go for it. But the first time in, if you're thinking about doing it, I would consider finding a co-founder for sure. And you really want somebody who has the opposite skill set as you. So if you're really, like you said, if you're really good with the technology, you can build anything. The problem is, it doesn't matter what you build. If nobody knows it exists, you don't know who your customer is, you don't know how to find those customers and sell the product, you're just doomed already, right? You got to know how to sell your product or you're never going to sell it. That's reality. And if you build it, they will come is not really a thing. So engineering, like software engineering, is actually the easiest part of all of it. Like I can hire software developers in the Philippines for like a few dollars an hour to engineer anything. Doesn't matter. I can hire them for very low cost, engineer almost anything. What's super valuable is being able to know what to engineer, right? The product side of it, knowing what to build, and then all the go-to-market strategy of the business. I mean, that is the biggest differentiator and value of a company is the go-to-market strategy, knowing who are we selling to and how do we sell to them? Because without that, the engineering doesn't even matter. You can't even sell it. So you can't grow and scale the business. So, I mean, it all depends on the type of business that you have. I also highly recommend if somebody wants to be a first-time entrepreneur to consider doing some kind of professional services-based company, which I think is your kind of company, do consulting. So that's a lot easier. And you don't necessarily have to have a co-founder for that. Yourself, you know, you can just be the best, you know, React developer or whatever, consultant. And next thing you know, you got people asking you for help with their React projects, and that, you know, kind of grow and scale that. Eventually, maybe you hire somebody else to help you do these React projects or whatever. That's way easier to do than building a SaaS product. Building a SaaS product sounds great, sounds exciting. You want to like make $1 billion or whatever, but it's very, very hard. And it takes years to even build a product, get it to market, and make revenue usually. So professional services is a much easier thing to do, especially as a first-time entrepreneur.
That's exactly, yeah. Like, thank you for bringing this up, man. This is exactly what I tried to do. And, you know, this is a trend now I'm seeing, which is they call it like the productized service. So where you package, you know, a product into a service and you offer it in a subscription model.
Yeah.
And you can do it in different ways. What other, like, you know, because you mentioned this, like, what are the areas like you, other than, you know, building a service where you can see entrepreneurs who want to test waters they can go with? And I'm asking you because also you have your own podcast and I'm sure like you discuss a lot of that on your show as well. So what are some of the trends that you are seeing like it's picking up now?
Well, I think the other key, if you want to be an entrepreneur, is networking. It's who you know. Like I said, I've been the technical co-founder basically three times, right? And it was all from people I knew or somebody who knows somebody that referred somebody to me. And they're like, hey, if you ever need a really good tech guy, you need to call Matt. He's your guy. Call him. Don't call anyone else. Call Matt, right? So, you know, I think that's part of the key is who you know and networking. And there are lots of very smart other entrepreneurs, or what I'd really say is business people, like somebody who works in a specific industry. So, for example, I work in home services. So it's somebody who works in home services, or it could be medical or whatever the industry is, that understands the problems of the industry. They're like, you know what? If somebody would build some software to solve this problem, it would be huge. You just need to find that person, right? You need to network and be able to find those people that they have the great ideas. They understand the industry. They also have connections in the industry, right? They potentially know how to sell it, who to sell it to, all of that. they just don't know how to build a product, right? And no, it's not easy to magically just find these people. After you listen to the show, I get it. But the more networking you do, the better off you are. And if there's any one tip I can ever give people, it's you're way better off being best known for what you do than being the best at what you do. It doesn't really matter if you're the best there is at what you do. Like, nobody's even going to know that you do it. You want to be the best known beats best every single time. We buy products and services every single day from companies, restaurants, all these things that are just the best known. The biggest franchises, the biggest brands. They don't have the best product, but you don't know the companies that have the best products. You've never heard of them, right? So it's building your own brand and being best known and networking, and things like LinkedIn are great for that. Like what you're doing with your podcast. Well, you, business, your brand, your expertise. And you never know if somebody like me is going to think, oh, you know what? He could help them with this and refer. And next thing you know, you're off to the races doing something, right? So the networking part of it is huge, and being best known for what you do.
I agree 100%. And I was telling you also before we start the recording that, you know, doing a podcast, I'm not only the podcast. I mean, you know, you need to let the world know about you. And, you know, one of the things that I learned the hard way, like going to meetups, trying to find like groups of people who meet from time to time. And, you know, there you would, by the way, you can get a lot of ideas from there, because you would see people sitting, discussing some of their challenges. And this is right. Where, you know, some of my ideas came to my mind. One of the things, actually, like, you know, the one of the services that I offer with my business partner, it came because I was going to customers when I was working in the corporate world, and they kept mentioning something that, you know, they told me, you know what, like, no one told us about this. And, you know, like, we think we can do it. I said, okay, let's try to build something around it. So it's always being talking to people to get ideas, because, and I think you would agree with me, man, you don't want to build a product which you try to find a problem that it solves. You need to build a product. Like, how you know, because you've been into this for a long time also, Matt, like, why do you think entrepreneurs do this mistake? Like, why we see it repeating again and again? And, oh, we repeat it on, you know, I repeat on my show. I'm sure that you have discussed it also with a lot of people. But why we see people do the same mistake? What's the main reason?
Well, I think to some degree I made this mistake with one of my companies.
I did as well.
And part of it was I was trying to solve my own problems. I'm like, you know what? I have this problem. If I have this problem, everybody must. So I'm going to go build a thing to solve. And, you know, we built a good business. You know, we grew it to doing millions of dollars a year in revenue, and we sold it and whatever. But it was terribly hard. It was brutally hard. And the other mistake that I made was we overcomplicated it. Like, you know, you have to be very careful of building like a product versus like a platform. And as developers, we tend to build platforms. And what I mean by that is, so instead of having like one feature, like one small thing that you do and you're like the best at it, you keep adding more features, more like other products. You're like, now when I sell it, you can sign up for this and this and this and this. And we do all the things for you, right? Like, if, for those of us who lived in the 90s, remember like the trapper keeper of all the things. It does all the things, holds all the things. People don't buy those, and they're terrible to sell, because if I call you and I'm like, hey, I want you to buy my thing, it can really help you. You're like, okay, yes or no, I'll buy it. Versus like, I need to have like an hour long call and explain the 27 things that we do. And by the way, I need you to get every stakeholder of every department in your company to also come, because this is going to affect all of them. Like, you're just done. Like, forget it. Like, forget it. It's too complicated of a sell, right? And so that's the struggle that we have too, is we overcomplicate. Well, if we just add this other feature, add this other product, but it overcomplicates the product. So it's hard to sell. It's hard to market. And that was the problem I had. So mine was actually, it was a company called StackFi, and we were selling application monitoring related stuff to software developers. So we did error tracking. We'd collect all their errors, collect all their logs, server monitoring. And then we did APM, like code level performance tracking. And You know, now today you have companies like Datadog, New Relic, and stuff that do this. And we were doing this like 10 years ago when we started, similar kind of time frame to them. But because we had so many different products, it just made it complicated to sell and explain to people, where if we would have only done logging, we would have been more successful. Like, we just overcomplicated it. And even to this day, for those who are listening, if you use something like Datadog, like you log in there today and you're like, holy, there's 50 things in here and it's confusing and complicated. Give me the one thing I need and take the rest of this crap away, right? And that's the point, is products easily become overcomplicated. As a developer, especially as an entrepreneur, you get in this mindset of like, well, if I just add this one more thing, we'll be able to sell the product, right? And that's completely
it. Yeah, 100%. And because I worked as, a pre-sales consultant and a sales consultant, so this is the best that myself, I thought, oh, if I tell the customer about all the cool features we have, you know, like, they will buy. Because, you know, I'm not the founder, but I'm one on the ground trying to sell the product, whether it's from technical perspective or sales perspective. But of course, I was lucky enough to learn after a couple of months when I started in this career path, the customer cares about the problem that they have. They don't care about how many features I've got, right? So the question that they will ask me, okay, can you tell us how you are solving our problem, or how your solution is performing better than whatever we have now? You need something tangible that people can relate to. If you just show them
things better too, that's the thing. You can't go in there and be like, hey, I know you do this thing today and I have a better version that is, you know, a little cheaper. It doesn't matter. They have other higher priorities. They're like, their hair is on fire. Their boss is going to fire them because they have like these 10 major problems. And here you come in, you're like, well, I can save you $500 a month. Like, dude, I don't need $500 a year with me. Our business is going to die because of these serious problems, right? So that's the thing, is just because you think you can do something that's marginally better, they have bigger major issues. And by the way, if you can identify what those bigger major issues are, go solve.
Yeah, 100%. And this brings me, you know, to the question that, you know, to like two stages. I will do it in two stages. So you said like we tend, as technical people, we like to build platforms and put all things. So this is, I think, where having the MVP very, very simple is key, right? So from your experience, like, how, when you say keep it simple, you know, we keep it stupid simple, right? This is what the lead even model mentioned. So how, what is simple? I mean, should it be just one problem to be solved? Like, they should figure out the UI should be easy. When we say simple MVP, what do we mean really? And I'm asking you this question to explain to someone who is maybe now about to design their MVPs and they want to put into consideration, okay, what should we put as minimal, really minimal viable product?
So I just started a new company. It's called At Capacity, and it's digital marketing related technology for managing pay-per-click ads and other stuff for primarily home services companies. Okay. And we're literally about to go live with our first clients. You know, we've been in like MVP phase for the last 4 months, right? And so on a weekly basis, I have to think about like, well, I'm not sure how we're going to do this in the future. I don't know if we need this feature in the future. I don't know if we need this like extra flexibility in the product. So we're not going to do it. We're not going to build it. Like, that's a future problem. Like, if we need this extra functionality, this extra like flexibility in the settings or whatever it is, that's a future Matt problem. Like, it's not an MVP Matt problem today of getting the product live, right? So that's one way I like to think about it, is like, can this be a future problem? Like, if we have to solve this, we'll solve it later. We don't have to solve it today, right? How do we keep this simple and get the product to market? And, you know, customers, there's, you know, when you talk about simple too, you talk about like the user experience and UI, and something to be said for like a really simple UI where it's like, man, this is so simple, it looks like you built it over the weekend. And they're like, there should be more to it, right? So at some degree, there's, you've got to have like the minimal amount of feature set that it looks like it's feature complete to some degree, right? Not like, oh, you only did like half of it, like dinner and meat, you forgot the rest of the meal, right? Like, you've got to wrap it out a little bit. But you can also, like in our product today, we don't have any reporting. We have not built any reporting, but you know what? Our customers are still buying it, but we know we are going to have to build reporting. Like that's another example of this. But we could just throw together kind of a MVP version of some reporting, like some really simple reporting. It doesn't have to be the world's best reporting with custom dashboards and advanced filtering and emailing of the reports and like all this kind of crazy stuff that you can build, right? It's like, how do you make it the simplest thing possible? So at least when you do a demo to a client, you're like, yeah, we have reporting. Ta-da, reporting, right? And that's what you have to think about when it's like minimal. Like, what is the minimal thing we need to do so we can build trust with the customer? Because that is the most important thing, is building trust. And that's the hardest thing as a startup, right? People always joke about, oh, you don't get fired for buying IBM or Cisco and, you know, stuff like that, right? Big companies, they will spend big money. Nobody wants to get fired for making a wrong decision, taking a bunch of extra risk, right?
Right.
That's the hard thing as a startup, is really what you're asking for with these first customers is their trust. Their trust to say, you know what? They're willing to take the leap to use this little startup to do this thing. So, you know, that trust is really valuable. And, you know, you've got to make sure you build things, you know, from the right quality perspective and solving the problem perspective to meet that trust, to earn their trust, to get the referrals, to get the next clients without overcomplicating everything. And in the code, it's really easy to overcomplicate everything and build it for like large scale enterprise. And the other big mistake that people make is they treat their startup as the time to go learn some new programming language or some new database or some new front end framework or whatever. Nope, screw all of that. Terrible idea. Pick the most boring thing you've known all these years. And simple programming language, simple database, simple front end framework. Now is not the time to be like learning Rust and MongoDB with a true serverless deployment on Cloudflare or whatever crazy idea you have. Like that is going to slow you down in so many ways. So when you talk about simple, it's the technology stack has got to be simple too. It's got to be simple all the way through.
Yeah, that's really, you know, exactly the the answer I was looking for. It's spot on. Now, if I'm not mistaken, I've seen you, Matt, speaking about people spending lots of money on building the MVP. And this is where, you know, they can go and try to minimize, I would say, as much as possible, you know, these costs. So again, from your opinion, what is the acceptable amount, I would say, of money that should be spent on an MVP? Because at the end of the day, an MVP might succeed and might not. So it's a risk. And the second one, where they can go? You mentioned Philippines, for example, right? So, but again, like, how, especially if someone is in the US or maybe someone in Dubai and they want to deal with remote teams. So this fact of trust, I would say, or like making sure that the quality, it would be up to the level that they expect. So how they can deal with the with this issue?
So there's a couple topics there. And so starting out is, okay, I sit down with somebody else. We got a business idea. We need to build the MVP. We need to build the product. How are we going to do it? Well, if neither one of you know how to write code and build it, that's your first hurdle, right? So either you can write code or you have to be able to write checks. And you better be prepared to write a lot of checks and have a lot of money to invest in development, right? I mean, if you can write the code, you're way better off, you know, at least if somebody on the team can help write the code, build the MVP. And so one way that people do that also is they may give up stock or sweat equity or whatever, find people that becomes like their little side project to help do stuff. Like you can get creative that way and figure out some way to will this thing into existence. You know, for my first company, I had a full-time job and then I would go home and work 3 or 4 or 5 hours every single evening building this startup, building this company, right? For over a year. And then when I finally was able to work full time for it and take a small salary, it was a smaller salary than my original job, right? So, you know, even as a developer, you've got to be willing to put in the hours and probably take a salary cut and all those kind of things to get this thing going, right? So you can either write the code or you got to write checks. And if you're probably going to need potentially, depends on the product, right? It could be $20,000, could be $50,000, could be $100,000. If it's something really complicated, it could be millions of dollars. If you're like, hey, I need to build this product that's going to launch satellite space, like, probably going to need a lot of money, right? Or like, I want to build Uber, and I'm going to need like millions of dollars in legal fees to actually get this done. Like the type of business you're doing may need a lot of capital, right?
Mm-hmm.
But for a lot of things, I would say you probably need maybe $50,000 or something like that. I mean, my startup, we built, I've probably spent about $50,000 or $60,000 building my new company's product. And I built all of it. I did a little bit of the development. I saw the product strategy and design and that part of it. Didn't do much of the actual writing myself. And I had three developers in the Philippines doing all the work. And, you know, that's how I was able to spend, you know, $15,000 a month kind of budget, engineering the product over 4 months, where it's like probably 60 grand or so, plus my time. And we have a product, we have our first customers, we have revenue, we are in market, 60 grand. So that's been really good. So you talk about finding talent. So I actually own a company in the Philippines that does software development for other people. I started 5 years ago. We have 300 employees called Full Scale. And, you know, there are companies like us all over the world in, you know, of course, there's lots of them in India. There's lots of them in Latin America. My company's in Philippines. There's smart developers all over the world. And you can hire people from a lot of these places for half, 60% less, 70% less than in the US or other major markets. And the issue is trust. You hit it earlier. It's 100% trust. Like, yeah, I can go to Upwork or one of these places and randomly find some developer, but how do I know if they're, how do I trust them, right? And so at Full Scale, that's a big key to our growth is, you know, it's trust. It's how do you build trust in your potential customers? A lot of that is from networking and referrals and stuff like that. But that's the hard part, right? When you go to hire a dev team, especially if you're a startup, your company is going to be successful or die, may bankrupt yourself because you hired the wrong developers. You invested that $50,000 and it didn't work. So it's like, now you have $50,000 in debt or you lost 50 grand. So yeah, you mentioned earlier, it's trust. It's like finding a reputable vendor that you can have help do this. And one thing I would highly suggest to people is if you're thinking about hiring somebody like a dev team in India, Philippines, whatever, that's great. But if you don't have anybody on your team, you also probably like a consultant, co-founder, or I mean, a fractional CTO,
mm-hmm.
part-time technical co-founder, somebody that can oversee the project, somebody that can figure out, is this other dev team doing things the right way? Or am I just lighting my money on fire every month and we're getting nowhere? You know, having somebody on your side that can help keep the dev team in contact as well. Is something.
I think this is good advice. And we are, I think, in a time lucky enough because, you know, this trend of having fractional CTOs, I wasn't seeing it much before. So now it's something that I started to see more. Actually, I had like a couple of fractional CTOs on the show so far. And because as you mentioned, maybe at the beginning, even they don't need to hire a full-time CTO, you know, until they are sure that the idea is, you know, validated and it might become something big. And because you mentioned about, you know, the financial aspects, I would say. So there's no general rule, I know, and there's no one right or wrong answer, but should they see funds from the beginning or they should do bootstrapping? Like how, like if you're gonna decide yourself on this, Matt, like which route you would go?
The best thing you can do is find customers, right? Instead of spending all your time finding investors, you could build a product and spend your time finding customers. That's a lot of mistake I see with people is like they spend forever trying to raise capital instead of finding customers, and potentially your customers could fund it. They could be your investors as well. You know, I'm in the home service space and also potentially looking at using our software for people who own apartments. So I met with one of my neighbors. I never met him before. I randomly met the guy at a swimming pool last week. had breakfast with him. You know what? He could fund my whole company. He's got millions of dollars. And so if he could see value in what we're doing for the apartment space, he would be a great strategic investor. It's like, not only can he be a customer, he could refer us to other people in the space, right? So potentially it's finding the right partners that are strategic partners in the space. My very first company, we put the whole way. The only money we took was a small amount of money from a customer. It was from a customer. And that customer then was one of our largest sources of referrals, took all of our like referral phone calls. So somebody would say, oh, how does your product really work? And we talk to one of our customers, whatever. He took all the calls. He went to, you know, different conferences and events in the industry and whatever, and always promoted us. He was huge. So that's the other thing to consider, is trying to find somebody in the industry that you could sign a contract with and say, hey, if, you know, they will buy it if I build this thing. Like, you know, we just need to build it and then they will use it and I've got a guaranteed customer. Or will they invest, right? And that's something else to consider.
That's good advice, I would say, as well. And maybe it's back to your point when you were mentioning about networking. So this is where if they build the relationship, they can find, you know, their ultimate customer through their network, and then they can customize it. And the customer will love it, because people, they like when they see solutions that exactly fits them. So the more they would be networking, so it all comes back to the same concept that you mentioned, Matt. Now, from, let's say, trends perspective, you know, being a CTO for a long time, I know AI is on everyone's mind and so on. But like, if from your point of view as a CTO, what you are seeing happening in the AI space, and what other emerging technologies, you know, like you are seeing also being picked up, and where we might be in the future?
Well, Things continue to change, right? I've been doing this for 20 years, you know, from a technology perspective, right? I was writing JavaScript to work with IE6 and Netscape Navigator way before we had jQuery, and now we have React and Angular and all these things. And so the technology definitely changes, and creating software is easier than it's ever been. But I kind of feel like some of it is starting to stagnate, right? You have things like React and Angular now that are like about 10 years old. Like, not much has changed with it. We've gotten more used to how we create front-end software, and then it connects to various APIs and backends and stuff. And like that whole like mode and kind of style of development is kind of really stabilized. And, you know, from that perspective, it's hard to think how much of that will change. I think the other big thing that people don't talk enough about is WebAssembly. I think WebAssembly could be the thing that upends a lot of this, where do we move from JavaScript to doing more things in WebAssembly? That could be a huge change. And I would almost welcome that, because I hate JavaScript, maybe because IE6 ruined it for me. The young kids today don't know how hard it was a long time ago. So I have all the scars from 20 years ago. So you guys and your fancy React and Angular, I still have the nightmares of IE6. I'm more of a backend guy. Give me the database, and I'll do wizardry there, and leave me out of the front end mess. But you mentioned AI and other trends and timing, and all these things come in trends. And you know, in regards to being an entrepreneur, timing is everything. Like my first company, the reason we were successful was timing, and we were in the right place at the right time when the market kind of needed our solution. We were there. We were already there. We didn't. That it was needed. We were kind of a couple years ahead. And the most successful companies in the AI right now are the same way. They're companies like Jasper. I talked to one that was like security related that was on my podcast. They had been working on generative AI stuff like a couple years ago. And so those are the ones that are super successful now, right? It's like they had already had kind of the business model. They had already kind of figured out the go-to-market strategy. They already kind of figured out the product and product market fit. Now, does ChatGPT and other large language models helping them? Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure they're rewriting their software to take advantage of this newer stuff. But point being is, some of this is like, you got to be out ahead of when some of this timing happens, right? But we're definitely seeing a huge wave of new AI startups. I invested in one of them. But I think it'll be a little bit of a trend, like everything else. You know, you see like a trend of these things and it'll kind of spike and then go away. I welcome the day when AI is just normal, right? Like we don't talk about it as being some differentiator where we're like, oh, I do X, but I add AI to it and that's why I'm different. Kind of like people were like, oh, I build software, but I use NoSQL. And like that was some big deal that I used NoSQL or I used cloud or whatever. Now, you know, I look forward to like looking at people and they say that cloud is a deal. Cloud. Why wouldn't you use container? Like, how is that? I look forward to AI being the same way. Like people stop talking about the only difference is they use AI. How do we get to the point where like, yeah, everybody uses AI. Like, why wouldn't you use AI? Like, of course you use AI. That's not a differentiator. If you don't use AI, I'd be more suspicious, right? I welcome that day because I'm sick of hearing it.
Oh, you know, like I have multiple, I would say, terms that I don't want to hear anymore. And, you know, sometimes I feel pity for the customers that they have to listen to, in my opinion, they became very boring messaging. Hey, we have an AI ML powered technology. Okay, so what? You mentioned cybersecurity. We are zero trust. You know, everyone is becoming zero trust. Like, so, yeah. So you're not bringing something new to the table, and actually you are already in a crowded market. So better to focus. And because I had another episode about, you know, the story, actually, back to your point, not about the features, right? So you need to tell it as Bruce, my guest, he did it in the episode with me. You need to build a story around your product, your service. Using these fancy terms, you know, customer is not buying them anymore. Like
they just want to solve their own problems, right? They don't care that it has AI. They care about, I have this problem. Like for my company, I need to create content that's not the same on every one of our customers' website.
Right.
I need the content to be different. That's my problem. Maybe AI can solve it. Maybe something else can solve it. I don't even care. Call it whatever you want. Call it pink fluffy slippers. Just solve my problem. Right? And so, but that's the problem as software developers, as entrepreneurs, we're so focused on like, hi, my name's Matt. I use AI to solve your problems. But not understanding the problem. Like, it's not about AI. It's about solving the problem. It's more about, hey, Matt, I'm here to help you solve your duplicate content issues. How I do it, it doesn't even actually matter.
Right, 100%. And by the way, I was associated with some vendors before because my career was with vendors. So now once I started my own company, I don't have this anymore. So some of the customers, you know, that I can talk very freely now because I don't have a vendor identity or like a sales rep identity that is approaching them. Yeah, they tell me stories, you know, like, hey, we don't want to see anymore this email. Hey, you have to see this cutting edge technology using AI or blah, blah, blah. And because, you know, and this is an advice for founders as well. And for anyone, guys, like, you know, customers are, you know, smart enough to go and find about this technology. And, you know, like you need to be, as you mentioned, Matt, in front of them in the right time, right? So you're solving the problem when really they need to solve it the most. They need it now, right? So it's all about this. And it's a very good point you mentioned. Now, Matt, tell me a little bit about, we chatted a little bit before we started recording, about your podcast. You know, I follow it. I listened to a couple of episodes, but for the people who, you know, maybe they are interested, can you tell us what's your format, what you discuss on the podcast?
Yeah, so about 5 years ago, me and another gentleman started a podcast called The Startup Hustle. We've done like 1,100 episodes, four different episodes. And so it's all about entrepreneurship. And our goal is to keep it real and talk about the struggles of being an entrepreneur, like trying to make it sound all extravagant and talking about the real life, you know, reality behind it. We did a 52-part series about how to start a tech company, which was super cool. Every week we talked about like the idea phase and product market fit and raising capital and like all these different topics. Like there's 52 topics, which was super good. had a lot of fun with that series. It's crazy. 52 weeks in a row on that. But yeah, we have a lot of fun with it. We have a lot of very interesting guests, a lot of fascinating guests. I recorded an episode this week with somebody who was the CEO of a publicly traded battery technology company that has reinvented lithium ion batteries that will make them have 50% more storage capacity, which is like a game changer for battery technology. So I look forward to our cell phones having a better battery life or something like this. So we talk to interesting people. It's fun.
Nice. So I will make sure I will put also the link for that. And Matt, where people can find more about you and your company?
So yeah, so you can definitely follow me on LinkedIn. I have like 27,000 followers on LinkedIn. I post content every day on LinkedIn. A lot of it is CTO and founder, tech founder kind of content. So people probably find interesting. I mentioned our podcast, Startup Hustle. I also have a blog, which is that visionaryCTO.com, which I write. And if somebody's in the digital marketing space, always love to chat. My company does digital marketing for service-based companies called At Capacity. And then I have a company in the Philippines I mentioned called Full Scale, which does software development for other people if anybody needs help doing software development. So,
sure. And my final question, is there anything you wish I had asked you, Matt, and feel free to answer it?
You know, what is a CTO and what are they supposed to do is always a question, because I feel like that's a total misnomer.
Yeah, tell us about it.
You know, from my perspective, I feel like the worst thing that happens in, I think this is a huge mistake that people make, especially in early stage startups, is they find any software developer they can find that's willing to work for basically nothing to have sweat equity in their company, and then call them the CTO, which I think is a terrible mistake. And most CTOs at more growth stage companies have a totally different role. They're not really hands-on writing code. Like, that's not what most CTOs do. They should have a background in software development. They should be really freaking good at architecture, knowing like how the product should work, how the pieces should come together. They don't need to be writing the code, but they know like, hey, if we use this kind of technology, this tech stack, like how to architect the things, how to solve the problems, right? They get able to solve whatever the hardest problems are. They got to be able to solve them or find people that can solve them, right? Like, it all rolls to them. But I think the most important thing, especially in a SaaS company, is our CTOs that are very product focused. They're more outward focused. They understand the industry. They talk to customers. They understand the product. They're not like hidden in the office somewhere, like writing code. Like, that would be the worst CTO. They need to understand the product. They need to be very, very product focused, especially for a SaaS company. Now, if you're a manufacturing company or something, it's totally different, right? You're like, how do I optimize our cost for how we make widgets or whatever? That's a different thing. But if you build SaaS, you as a CTO, you've got to be very, very product focused. You got to be focused on building cool products, not cool code. That's what I always say.
Yeah, if you allow me to add something to that also, Matt, yeah. They should. If they have done it, that's good. It's getting some business experience. I mean, even if they would not go themselves tell the product, but it's good to understand, as we call it, have some business acumen. So at least, you know, when they talk to customers, they can talk the same language. And instead of telling them, hey, like we, as you said, like we are using Rust or we are using Golang. Yeah. So at least they can talk something which more, I mean, on the same level as the customer would understand. So yeah, 100%. And you're right. I should have asked this question at the beginning.
That's why I mentioned earlier, I credit my I ever had, because I had to talk to customers all day long. I was thrust into it. I'm like 20 years old, lead developer, and talking to customers all day. It really helped me a lot.
Yeah, and this is, you know, the way to do it is you go, and again, we came back to the same point. You go network, you go speak to people, you be out there. Don't be shy. Keep asking questions and you will learn. And actually the best thing maybe is you'll find a mate who's opposite to you. Like, if you are a too much technical guy, try to find someone who's good, for example, at sales or marketing, and hang out with him.
Yeah.
You would learn a lot of things, ton of things. This is actually how I did myself. Of course, I'm not a coder. I was not a programmer, but, you know, I had to learn some business thing, and this is how I learned it, and it worked fine for me. So, Matt, thank you very much for the time today. I think, and I hope that the audience will love what we talked about today. You put a lot of highlights on many things, from hiring to, you know, how to find the right team, how to scale the team, how to validate the idea, building the MVPs. And now what we discussed about, you know, some of the characters that a CTO should have. So this is really very rich information, I would say. And as usual, this is how I end the episodes. Guys, for you, if you are listening or watching this, I like to hear your feedback. So you can find me mainly same as Matt on LinkedIn. You can find my email also as well. So feel free to hit me with an email. If you are interested to be a guest, like same as Matt was a guest today, also don't hesitate. Reach out to me. We can discuss, set up a time. Time zone is not a problem. Matt is in the US. I'm in Dubai. So, but still, we can find some common grounds to do the recording. So thank you very much for tuning in, and we meet again next episode. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.